I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
On today's episode, it's Rove McManus time as we dive into the fifth episode of the new Doctor Who season, Flux. My name is Justin Hamilton, and you better answer my questions or I'll bite your toes here at Big Squid. Thank you very much for joining us today. It's the start of a new week, and that means we have a new episode of Doctor Who to dig into, the penultimate episode of the six-part Flux series, and there is plenty for Rove and I to discuss yet again. I'm sounding like a broken record. I'm really enjoying this series. Starting to get a little bit worried as we get to the penultimate episode where you're like, God, how are they going to land all of this? But why worry? Why not just be in a good mood and figure they will land it and then we'll see next week and we'll go from there. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. This is a fun series. So a lot to discuss, but before we get into it, just to let you know, this week we're going to have three podcasts coming out. So this one today, tomorrow we return to the world of David Lynch with his insane adaptation of Dune, which is really good timing because after I finish doing everything that I'm doing here, I'm off to a preview of the new version of Dune. So that's right. We will have back-to-back Dune episodes over the next couple of Tuesdays. I'm really looking forward to that. I have kept away from reviews. I've kept away from just about everything with this new version by Denis Villeneuve. So I can't wait to see how it all plays out. I'm a Timothée Chalamet fan, so I have high hopes for a movie that stars him. Then, of course, on Thursday, we continue our Space Podyssey series with the 70s cult classic Silent Running. So you've got a few days to go and check that out. For those of you who got angry at me because E.T. made you sad, well, be careful with Silent Running as well. It's not as good as E.T., but it might squeeze some tears out. So be careful. That's all I'm saying. Just be careful. But that does mean you're getting a double dose of Ben Elwood this week, which is always a good thing. Next week, I'll let you know how we're going to navigate the Christmas break and then how we will launch back into the new year. Season 5 will continue. Look, I love making this podcast, but I am definitely going to need a little break. But we will keep things rolling here. So there will be some mini episodes coming your way, and you will at least have options in that very busy time of the year to check out what we're up to and be able to listen to Big Squid. As my regular listeners might be aware, we've launched a Patreon for the podcast that gets you all types of bonus apps, scripts for the podcast, early looks at new segments. And you also have an episode dedicated to you. And today's shout out goes to David Brogno, who joined our Facebook group, our private Facebook group in June of this year, and is now one of the podcast patrons. Thank you, David, for taking the time to sign up. And from everyone who works with me on the podcast as well, we really appreciate your support. I hope you're well. And I really hope you're able to put up your feet over Christmas. Have a bit of downtime before it all cranks up again next year. I hope it's just nice and peaceful. That's what I wish for everyone, actually. Just a nice, peaceful Christmas break. So thank you very much, David. If you'd like an episode dedicated to you, along with a bunch of other goodies, head over to Patreon and look up Justin Hamilton Big Squid, and you'll find a tier that suits you. Okay. Let's grab Rove, because the last time we saw the Doctor, she'd been transformed into a weeping angel, which I reckon is maybe not a good thing. Let's find out how she's going to escape this situation in Survivors of the Flux.
It's very hard.
Pattern optimization in progress.
We've been in this decade for 3 years now. Do you think we'll ever get back?
Companies that are in pirate fleet. Earth's shield is now breachable.
How you expect to protect this pitiful race, I do not know.
Could you feel the Time Force growing? It's working. Just as we planned.
Last week, Conservative MP Nick Fletcher stated in Parliament that because popular entertainment like Doctor Who has transformed the male character into a female character, young men lack role models and they turn to crime. Rove McManus, what crimes have you committed since Jodie Whittaker took over?
Well, look, I've committed many crimes against comedy. That's I've got a long-standing record for that. Oh, isn't that a wonderful outlook to have? You know, don't change my stuff. And I would counterpoint. Have you even watched an episode of Doctor Who? Don't tell me you have. I wouldn't believe you anyway. You don't understand. This is how it works, you idiot.
Oh my God, it's so good. Look, in his defense, like once the Doctor became female, I only had Ethan Hunt, Captain America, Batman, James Bond, Jason Bourne, Indiana Jones, Han Solo, John Book, the protagonist, Cobb Cooper, Russ Cole, Hawkeye, Sherlock Holmes to look up to. So I.
And 18 different Spider-Men.
Yes. So, you know, it's just been crime ahoy on my side of things. If only I had that role model.
Oh, and of course, we get a female doctor, and lo and behold, the whole planet's locked down thanks to a global pandemic. Yeah. How convenient!
Yes, you know what? I saw it coming.
So much you can blame. So much that she should be held responsible for.
You know, when I see these things, my first reaction is, "Aren't you embarrassed to be standing up in Parliament and saying this?"
Yeah, I do think there's no tongue in any cheek here. It's just you. And I get that some of them just like to make a splashy headline. I must admit, I was kind of chuffed to go, oh, okay, if you think that's you obviously think that's a mainstream target. You obviously feel making that reference to Doctor Who now being a woman is something that everybody understands, that mainstream Australia and wider than that get as a reference. People aren't going, wait, you mean it's still not that curly haired guy with the long scarf? What are you talking about?
What?
So I kind of took it as a wonderful compliment. You know, if he mentioned, I don't know, the suggestion that there could be a new female James Bond and got all huffy about that, I would say, wait a minute, we've already done it on Doctor Who. How dare you? So I'm happy to be included, to be honest.
It's a good way of looking at it. It's a sign of
I'm
positivity.
I'm happy to be the ones responsible. And I just wish there was more crime going on. I wish there was more, ills in the world that could be blamed on Doctor Who so that we could take credit for it. Like, if anything, you go, there's not really. But, geez, it would be nice if there was to go, that's us. Thanks. Yeah. You're welcome.
We did that.
We're on a list. Woohoo!
finally, always wanted to be on a list too. So
sometimes it really is. Doesn't matter what the list is, you're on the list. Great, I'm in.
Great, fantastic. as long as people are talking. So much in this episode is really juicy. I have to say, right off the bat, it was really kind of nice to see that the Doctor changed back straight away, because you know she's going to change back. So let's just change her back immediately. We didn't have to have her taken off the board for too long. And what I really enjoyed about that, not only the image of all the weeping angels, but, man, they just seem nastier, don't they? They seem to have a little bit more of a streak of cruelty going on.
As we talked about last week, villains with a motive are really great, and it is important. And yep. It can be difficult with characters like the Weeping Angels to know what to do with them and how to represent that. So the fact that we're inside this hive mind, I guess, at first, and it's great, that shot we had closing last week into this week with just a sea. I don't know what the collective noun is for angels, weeping or otherwise, but stacks heaps of angels. You forget how impressive that is. And they're not doing anything, but Jesus, just they're still scary.
Yeah.
So that was really wonderful and a great way of being able to get all of that exposition and motive and backstory out in a way that made sense. I thought it was great. And yeah, you're right. It's just really easy to just wave the magic wand and say, yep, she's back, she's fixed. It was just a way of the angels just being shitheads and saying, well, we just wanted to turn you into one of us because it keeps you still. It's a bit, you know, Han Solo carbonite stuff.
Yeah.
Easy to transport. I mean, it makes you very breakable. I just want to make this very clear to the angels. Just packing fees, you know, a fleshy kind of humanoid body is going to pack a lot easier than a stone statue. So I don't know what their shipping rates are, but it would be through the roof. Oh, it's like when you go to buy something on eBay and you go, oh, this thing's only $2.50, and they'll say shipping and handling $100,000.
I thought it was really cool.
And just at the end of it, just to go, she's back now. I take it that's what's happened. We're not still in some sort of the Ood has converted her now, and she's unangeled. I took that to be that's where we're at now, correct?
Yeah. She's just back to normal and it's all sorted. And we get to move on with it. One of the aspects of the series that I've really dug is that we're digging into a very relatable truth in a big sci-fi show. And that is, the Doctor just doesn't want to recover her memories because they're hers. She's trying to understand who she could have been if she hadn't been taken to Gallifrey. And this is a fundamental building block of everyone's personality. Who could we have been if we knew our real parents, or if we'd been encouraged at school differently or made different friends? Where do you think this storyline will take the Doctor?
Well, I'm still unsure as to the Doctor's motivations. I know there's that very, I guess, human trait of just wanting to know. Like, you know, if someone's erased your memory, of course you'd want to know. But I'm starting to think now, as we're sort of raising in the past, how much does she is it about her? How much does she really care about, well, how many were there of me? Was there hundreds? Was there thousands? And how much of it is just the fact that Division did it? And if all they did was erase, you know, a couple of years or a couple of weeks of her memory, she probably wouldn't be as mad. I think it's about what Division did. And that's her motivation. Whether it happened to her or not is not as important as the fact that Division did it and they were meddling. And if she is this timeless child, as she herself was saying, well, you shouldn't have come and messed with me. Like, you should have left me there. You know, you assume I came through the wormhole, but you don't know. What if I was waiting there to be collected by someone? What if I was supposed to be taken through it? What if whoever left me there was taken through the wormhole and was coming back? All these sort of options. I think that's what it's about now. She wants to know what's happened so that she can use that against Division. I don't think it's necessarily about filling in the gaps for her as much as it just builds evidence against Division.
Yeah, it was an interesting idea that maybe, you know, maybe whoever left her there thought, oh, it might be dangerous in this other universe. We'll just leave our daughter or our friend or whatever she was to those people. And then they've come back and like, holy moly, she's gone, you know, and now.
Yeah, imagine that. It's a really good point. To me, it almost was putting out there from a writer's point of view, maybe a lot of the theories that have been out there. Well, how did she come there? What was, you know, who left her there? Was she there for a reason? All those sorts of things. You know, I think even initially when the master told this story, she was described as being abandoned. So you just assume, oh, yeah, there's this child just sitting there. But you go, yeah, in front of a giant bloody gateway.
Yeah.
So who's to say someone wasn't coming in right behind her, or she was on her way through? So all of those are really valid questions that I'm glad were put in there.
Yeah.
But to me also then led to the great exchange between the Tectaeon character and the doctor, of, you know, Tectaeon saying, oh, well, sorry for, you know, taking you on the trip of the journey of a lifetime, by taking you and then making you the doctor.
Mm.
So it's a great argument to make, as much as we're talking about it with the angels, the motivations for the Tectaeon character, I thought, were very valid and makes for a great villain to then go, hey, come with me. Let's step into the next universe.
Yeah.
Just this one just over here, because apparently that's the other end of the wormhole, comes out there, mate. And we can find out exactly where you're from.
Yeah.
Isn't that, and from a scientific point of view, isn't that what you want? Isn't that what you want to find out?
Right.
I thought it was really, really juicy and really enticing.
It was, it's an aspect of this series where the Timeless Child, you know, I don't think it's unfair for even people who, when it was first introduced, were a little bit like, hang on a sec, I don't know how I feel about this. But as the series has worn on, I feel like these questions and these motivations and these different takes on what happened has really fleshed out the idea, and I've enjoyed it the more it's been explored.
Well, I'm one of those people. I didn't really leap onto the Timeless Child idea. Again, this notion that the Doctor's so supremely important. And it seems like that's happening again. There's this when it first happened, I was very reluctant to accept the idea. So I was just all in, betting the house on all this information came from the Master, and therefore it can't be true. Plus, we haven't seen it. It's been redacted. The point where it would say, oh, and it is you, and this is what happened, was not in the memory vaults on Gallifrey, as we found out at the end of last season.
Yeah.
So, again, it's all just on the word of the Doctor's arch nemesis, who's not quite right in the head.
Yeah.
So, and again, just for the Doctor to be asking a very similar character, hey, is everything I was told true? And she says yes, and the Doctor goes, ah, well, bugger that, that's not good. So I still feel like, well, okay, we'll see if that's true, but there's still this idea of the Doctor inspiring people, giving them hope, and that can be problematic. That's something that I'm starting to bristle against, this idea of she's the most important person in the entire universe, to the point that we're going to blow this universe up with her in it, because she's the only person that inspires hope. She's the only person who does good things. We're seeing the Bell and Vinda characters out there doing pretty well. And we've met, you would like to think there's more than just, that suggestion says there is no one on planet Earth who can inspire hope, and not even Oprah, not even Oprah Tectaeon, really. So she,
obviously,
so that part of
cable.
It is. No wonder she wants to get to another universe. It's just like I didn't get a car when they were handing out cars.
Yeah,
didn't get one.
The next universe.
So that part of it. So that's the part that I do get a little bit, all right, you know, we've had this before with Matt Smith. The Doctor is the most important person in the entire known universe. I would like to hope that that doesn't end up being the case, but we'll see what happens. It's now, to me, about Well, that's what we keep going on about what Division was when the Doctor was part of it, and she didn't like that. But what is it now? And like, where even from where we know the Doctor left Gallifrey as the William Hartnell incarnation onwards, is thousands of years for this character as we know it. Thousands.
Yeah.
So what's Division now? Is it still, you know, she's saying, I'm going to stop Division. Well, it might be something completely different now.
Yeah.
So that's now where I'm leading to. We keep being told about it's Division. But the only thing we know about Division is what it was, not what it is.
Yeah, it seems like it has grown exponentially from its original idea of this little task force that goes around and does a bit of meddling here and a little meddling there and a little push here and a little push there, and now it's just brought in all sorts of different alien races and has become this quite nefarious. Like, it was always, you know, not good, but now it's like a hydra. Its tentacles are everywhere.
Well, yeah, and that then leads to the question of, well, what happens when you remove that? You know, we've seen in recent memory, you know, you think you've ousted one despot and then just another one takes its place. You know, there's the happenings in Afghanistan are a pretty good indication of that. You think you're doing the right thing by taking one element out, but then it allows another element to come in.
Yeah.
So, you know, who's to say that maybe the Doctor finds herself in a terrible situation where she realizes, oh yeah, well, if I take Division out, just everything could fall apart because it's just so intertwined in the universe now. So that will be an interesting outcome. It's also fact that it's this they keep coming back to, like, when if you knew what Division had done, if you rediscovered, as it was worded in this episode, what Division has done. When you knew you'd never stop hounding us, it's like, well, meddling in other people's business is kind of what the Doctor does too. So I'm still waiting to find out, what is it exactly? What is Division exactly? How bad are they? And apart from just erasing the Doctor's memory, just like, how bad is it really? Really? Right. And I'm sure it's big, but we've got enough information now that I feel it isn't all of it. So what is it? How bad is it? And it's going to be very interesting to find out.
How'd you feel about the reveal of the older woman being Tatooine? Was that something that you expected?
Well, I'd mentioned that in when we first came up, when she first came up, that's immediately who I assumed it was.
Right.
And had missed in the credits that she had a different name.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's not a big leap, but it's nice to, you throw enough stuff out there, it's nice to have something stick to the blanket. So that was good. I always get a kick out of the, oh, you don't recognize me, do you? You go, yeah, because everyone's changing. Last time we saw you, you were a black man. So, yeah, I don't recognize you as a white old lady. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought there'd be something in the eyes. Okay.
Yeah,
it must be
sure.
a pain in the ass. I don't know how you get about in your day-to-day when someone comes up to you, maybe someone you went to high school and that's maybe only 30 years ago, and they come up to you and they're like, hey, what, you don't recognize me? And at least their face is the same. It's just aged slightly.
Yeah.
Imagine being a Gallifreyan Time Lord Division person where every person's going, hey, how am I? What do you mean you don't remember me? I've only had 15 faces since you last saw me. What a nightmare that would be.
Oh, yeah, you've just really pointed out what's wrong with Gallifrey. It's full of passive-aggressive assholes.
Oh. Although, what a great way to never have to really know anybody. Or you could just ignore someone who you really like is the biggest asshole in the world. And you just go, oh, sorry, just since the regeneration. They're like, I haven't regenerated since, in the last 2,000 years. Are you sure? Oh, just, you know how we live, this crazy world of ours with different faces.
Oh, yeah, no, I thought you must have been someone else with that old face. Okay, that makes
sorry,
sense.
I would use that excuse all the time.
Oh man, I would be leaning into it way too much. I'm hoping that the touch of Swarm is not death, though. I don't feel like, I wasn't really into the idea that she's dead already. I really enjoyed the Darth Vader-esque kind of offer of you know, join me, we can rule another universe together. What do you reckon? Do you think, are we going to discover that they're not being destroyed, and maybe they're being sent somewhere else where they can be harvested or something?
Yeah, well, again, they could just be – they're sort of disintegrating, aren't they, really?
Yeah.
But as we move on, it seems they're being turned into these time sprites or whatever they are. That maybe it looks like they're just dissolving, but maybe it's just, they're, again, being stored in Passenger or something else in the time force for Swarm to use. Yeah, I'm kind of a bit split because there's part of me that, you know, it's the usual story or plot device of the person who has all the answers right at the point they're about to give you the answers, you know, cops an arrow in the guts or something like that. Yeah. You know, the treasure is hidden in, or they've just drunk poison, that type of thing. So it's like, yeah, of course, right at the moment it's like, well, here's all the answers. She gets taken out. And I'd be fine with that. I don't necessarily need to see her come back. But I'm like you, I'm starting to think, yeah, I don't know that we're just wiping everybody off the board that easily. And maybe that's what needs to happen to undo Swarm and Azure, is to have all of these, you know, little mite things that they've, I guess, absorbed somewhat, maybe fight back against them, would be interesting to see.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I quite enjoyed that Swarm and Azure have been playing the long game and using the Doctor as a bridge to get to Division. That was a nice little plot point that came together. Look, is there a possibility next week we're in for an Avengers Infinity War type of ending where Swarm actually wins?
Yeah, I'm beginning to think that, because I must admit that I was a bit bummed that they didn't quite bring Swarm and Azure back. We've had what feels like 2 weeks where they haven't really been part of the A storyline from the, you know, the great sort of reveal of them and their grand plan to use the Temple of Adrapos and stuff like that. So, and I'm just loving the characters, really, really loving the characters. So when they were back at the start of this episode, I thought, great. And then we very quickly moved on from them until the end. They're back again. And for two characters that seemed like they were going to be our big bads this season, now you've got the, you know, killer old lady Gardner, Grand Serpent now stepping up.
Yeah.
The Sontarans and the Weeping Angels. I was worried that our two big bads, who I was really loving, were going to get lost in the shuffle a bit. So I'm glad it seems like at least we're getting back to them. So, yeah, maybe the end of this is them holding on until the next couple of specials before we head off. I still can't think or seem to resolve that everything's going to be wrapped up. Like, something has to be left hanging out there, whether it's Division or something that the Doctor learns about that. But I can't see, with three specials still to go before Jodie wraps up.
Yeah.
We need something to hang on to. We need something that's still going to be our big reveal. So the idea that, now we've got multiverses is interesting. It's interesting, you know, to sort of see that brought into Doctor Who, almost a surprise that it's never happened before.
Well, that is something that you and I have been particularly discussing this for maybe 5 or 6 years now, which is the lack of mainstream science and science theory hasn't been that explored that well in Doctor Who. It's felt more at times, more leaning into the fantasy than the science fiction side of things. And the mention of the multiverse, I was curious to know how you feel about hearing that, considering it is now a mainstream idea because of superhero movies, basically.
Well, I was watching this and thinking, I wonder when Chris Chibnall came up with this, because there's a lot of Loki to this.
Yes.
You know, the idea of, you've got these troops that are going through time and meddling with people's timelines, and then you have someone who comes in and is trying to stop it from the outside, and there are multiple versions of that character that will form an army to battle to get agency back to the people that are being toyed with.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if he wasn't already inspired by that, I reckon he would have been watching Loki just going, ah, shit, this is kind of where I was hoping to go.
Yeah.
Myself. And it's hard not to go, well, you've had plenty of time.
Yeah.
But it's good to see that it's there. So it is quite long overdue. And how much will that come into play with things like the, again, the fugitive Ruth Doctor? Is she from an actual multiverse as opposed to part of this Doctor's timeline? Will be one of those things that, yeah, it's now a very real question that we could find is the answer that's been lying in plain sight the whole time.
It could be absolutely fascinating if we discover that the fugitive Doctor is a Doctor, and all of those faces that we saw from the Brain of Morbius psychic battle are all of her previous incarnations, and they are all from a Doctor from a completely different universe, so therefore our timeline with our Doctor is complete, but maybe it's from their timeline.
Well, they have stepped into this idea a little bit in the Big Finish audio dramas. They have had, you know, different actors playing different Doctors in different multiverses.
Right.
So, you know, and just as an aside, seeing all our characters off playing, you know, Indiana Jones, I used to always think, you know, Stephen Moffat was the one who was setting up all these gaps for Big Finish to play with. But my goodness, Chris Chibnall is just going, here you go.
Yeah.
Or, you know, here you go, Russell T. Davies, when you come back. You want to create your own Doctor Who Hooniverse for streaming or what have you, then here you go. All the pieces are in play. Here's all your toys. Enjoy. So yes, this could be a very interesting outcome as to where we could go from here. Because there's also been a lot of people have said, hey, when they've sort of been stuck in production with you know, between seasons with, say, Jodie Whittaker, and how long a gap there is between, why don't you have a second production team that are working on a series of Eighth Doctor adventures? Now that, you know, we know that this Time Lord can jump around in different times and eras, and when they did the Night of the Doctor with the regeneration of the Paul McGann Eighth Doctor character, everyone got very excited and went, hey, we could finally give this guy the series he never had. He's only had one TV movie and a 7-minute short. That's it, really. And anything else has been audio dramas, which for some people is non-existent. So wouldn't it be great to give him the season that he's always deserved? So this could be a way of doing that, where you set up different Doctors living in different timelines, played by different actors. Would be really exciting.
That's definitely an exciting idea. Even you know, imagine a 6-part limited series, and it's one storyline that goes through, but it's affecting the Doctor in different incarnations. So then you only have one per episode. That would be a fun thing to do as well.
Yeah, exactly.
While I think of it, I have to say the image of the ship between the universes might be one of my favourite images in any episode of Doctor Who. I thought that looked magic.
Oh, the one that Chek Taoyuan was in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm always I just applaud in science fiction in general, but then mainly a show like Doctor Who, which is, you know, it's been going on for so, so long. The idea that you have to create planets and races and even character names to kind of, you know, here we were tripping over a Carvanista, and, well, I was Carvanista and Cassavan a couple of weeks ago. You know, you've got to be careful. And I don't know who the keeper of the keys is for, oh, well, you can't even have that character name because that was in Star Wars or Star Trek or some, you know, Blake's Seven that people don't know about. So someone's got to be in charge of all that. So every now and again, when even they just go, oh, we need a spaceship, or we need that monolith. You know, Bell's flying towards this thing called the monolith. Well, what does it look like? When someone can come up with like a really cool looking ship like that. At first, I thought it was her TARDIS, but I'm guessing it's just a ship. But geez, it does. It looks really slick and contemporary, which sounds weird for a show that's about anywhere in any space in time.
Yeah.
But I really loved it. I agree.
Yeah, she had a sense of the collector in the Marvel Universe going around taking the last vestiges of this universe. I wonder if whatever she's collected on that ship will be what will be the, you know, Deus Ex Machina of bringing that universe back to life, because she'll have everything at her disposal.
Yeah, you're right. We did zoom in on the classic Fob Watch character. I mean, if it opens and there's the face of Miss Minutes in there, we're going to be, that's what I think. We know that Chris Chibnall has really borrowed some ideas from somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know, we didn't quite see what all the other little trophies were. And as she said, any good scientist never throws anything away. So yeah, what else is in there? Where are they from? Are they artifacts from other faces of the Doctor, perhaps? But yeah, I really loved that. It was a pretty slick exterior, but inside just looked like, yeah, it's a bit of a mess, wires and things hanging everywhere, which just suggests, yeah, she's been in there for ages and she's just mucking around, and just when she needs a new part, she just plugs it in, type of thing. I really like stuff like that.
Yeah, I love that as well. You mentioned Yaz and Dan and the Professor having their Indiana Jones slash Lara Croft styled adventures. Did that appeal to you as much as it did to me? I was in particular loving little character moments like Yaz giving shit to Dan about, oh, are you from Liverpool?
Yeah, yes. Or even again, shouts to Kevin McNally doing the, you know, just when he's in the temple, and he's got this is delivery of the line, this is spectacular. Like, he's just so effervescent with positivity. I'm just really enjoying it. I did have to accept, put in a box and set aside, that's a lot of traveling to be done in 1 year. Everywhere they went was in 1904. So we're using a lot of steam power and trains, ships, as we saw, and it's all done in a year. And I appreciate we got some great fake beard work, but that was one of those things. I was like, wow, this has taken us not quite a full calendar year. Okay, but yeah, just coming into it, where they're already having this great adventure, and quite clearly the relationships are well formed between the three of them. Just once again, just how all these new characters are being brought in and working so well together that you go, yeah, I would watch a spin-off series of the year these guys have had going to find all these artifacts to find out when the world is going to end so they can meet the Doctor there. It's great.
Yeah, no, I've really enjoyed that as well. I was happy to see the Joseph Williamson storyline dovetail in again. Look, are the tunnels potentially linked to the malfunctioning TARDIS? And do you think we'll find out what's happening with the TARDIS next week? Or judging by the New Year's Day image, we might have to wait until then, don't you think?
Yes, we have the release of the image of what looks like a TARDIS cracking into pieces. So that's going to be interesting. So, yes, maybe all of our flux issues are still yet to be resolved by then. Yes, it's tricky because you do sit there thinking normally it's a standalone story. You can still have some elements that come through, but you're not necessarily going to have your regular viewing fans jumping on, as I should say, you're going to have people outside of those regular viewers jumping in for these specials. So it can't just be, hey, if you missed Flux, sorry. I will be very interested to see how that plays out. But I don't know. I'm still trying to work that out myself. I feel like I saw on, was it door number 9, the death door, the door that has death? Yeah. With all the death, don't go through the death door that has all the death. That it looked like, with all the sketches pausing, you could see there was just a hint of what looked like the monolith that Bell was headed towards, that Vinda landed on, that had swarmed there. So maybe that's where that leads, and that's either for Yaz and Dan and Jericho, their way to get to the Doctor, or is later on a way for the Doctor to get to Swarm, or at least where his hideout is. So I think that's where the ominous door number 9 takes us.
It doesn't take us to Christopher Eccleston?
Well, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Right.
If there was some nod to that. Again, you know, I know I'm only building up my own expectations, so if it doesn't happen, that's fine. But yeah. I'm still looking at last week we got a shot of Kate Stewart is going to be here. We're going to get some unit stuff. There's so much going on in this episode and so much more that you could put in that with the cliffhanger we had. I don't think you needed her face to get viewers hooked. We're 2 episodes out from wrapping this thing up. If you're not in already, I don't think suddenly showing her face makes you keep around. So that would have been a really great surprise, right? From a show that didn't even announce that they were coming back to like 2 weeks before. We've had nearly a year and a bit. And it's suddenly, it's coming back and here's everything. Doesn't seem like this is the era that we've been accustomed to. So I'm still trying to wrap my head around why are we getting all these goodies beforehand? So maybe, who knows, is the great reveal that they've managed to land the white whale and Christopher Eccleston is coming back? Who knows?
He said some nice things about Jodie Whittaker. It probably isn't, but it's a nice thing to speculate at this point.
He's enjoyed
his
time recording as the character again on Big Finish. The people who made those decisions before have left that he had his rocky issues with, have left Doctor Who and the BBC. So, you know, it can be done. Tom Baker was like this. People would probably forget Tom Baker, the 4th Doctor, did not come back for the first for the big 20th anniversary 5 Doctor special because he had problems with the character and him being portrayed in that way once again and being typecast and issues with the BBC and what have you. And he's eventually back in the fold. So, you know, anything's possible. Anything's possible with time.
Dare to dream. Let's get into the unit storyline. It seems the Grand Serpent has been playing a long game, and his infiltration of unit was a fun reveal over the course of this episode. What is his ultimate goal apart from opening up the Earth to the Suntarans?
Well, it seems, I guess he's just trying to take over. It was nicely explained by the Doctor's a hologram message to Yaz, which was very sweet.
Good moment.
I would just like, just once, whether it's Star Wars or Doctor Who or any science fiction film or television series, I feel somewhere in the future cosmos is the ability to have a hologram that doesn't flicker. It's just a beautiful, crisp, clear image. Everybody just feels the need to have it just kind of glitch, just rip.
Yeah.
Which is just like that breaks my heart to think at some point in like at no point in the future will we ever fix connection issues, even when we're able to put here we are, you know, you and I on a video call from opposite sides of the country. At some point that would have been impossible and the stuff of science fiction. But to think no matter how we get there, we still can't fix connection issues is a tough one for me to be able to get past on a day-to-day basis.
Get that hologram, turn it on and off, and get a better connection.
That's it. That's all you got to do. And maybe it's like, you know, old VHS tape. She's watched it so many times, she's just slowly wearing it out. but I will say there was a really nice sort of flame effect, almost smoking effect around the fringes of the hologram that was really, really cool. But, yeah, so she mentioned, okay, the Earth is the last place left because obviously that's bait for the Doctor. And so when everyone else has nowhere to go, everybody's going to be running to Earth. And that means all these horrible despots and villains and bad guys are all going to be saying, well, I want to be the one to take over it. As far as I can tell, that's the Grand Serpent. That's all he's here to do. I was actually questioning, I'll put this to you, do you think this was a character that didn't get the chance to be part of, like he was going to be the big bad for a series that never was because of COVID or was an idea that Chris Chibnall had. I'm beginning to wonder, like, geez, maybe he's just kind of been shoved in for a couple of episodes for what would have been a longer story arc that never got to be, do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, I'd love to read the first pitch you know, the before COVID took over. I'd love to, once everything's done and everything's settled, you know, it's always good to go back and unpack where things were going. Maybe you're right with that. Like, I still wonder if the Grand Serpent is going to turn out to be an aspect of Swarm. I'm not totally off that idea as yet. I think the Grand Serpent's been great. I've really enjoyed every moment with that character. You know, off the back of the Grand Serpent, you know, as someone who has a little girl, what would you prefer her not to see? The Little Shop of Horrors serpent that crawled out of people's mouths and into his back, or a weeping angel? Which one is the more scary thing for you to have?
The serpent. She's aware of angels. She saw the closing moments of last week's episode and was wondering, because her thing is she knows that the regeneration is coming soon and she doesn't want the doctor to not be a woman anymore. That's her big concern.
Right.
So when I said to her, oh, yeah, this is where we're at, she was like, is this how she regenerates? And I said, no, I don't think so. I think, you know, this is how she's going to get out. And then, like, it was 2 days later and she said, so how did the doctor survive being a weeping angel? I said, oh, I don't know yet. And she said, oh, well, when's the next episode? And I said, not till Monday. And this is like Friday. I said, not till Monday. And she said, oh, you must be struggling with that. I was like, I am. And then when I told her today what's happened, so she was quite happy with the resolution, and then mentioned that I was going to talk to you about it. And look, you can choose to keep this in or not. But she said to me, is Hammer with Dad? And I said, no, he's not. And she said, that's a real shame because I think he'd be so good at it because he's into really fun stuff.
Oh, stop it. You know how much I love her already.
Because I was like, you're right. She says, yeah, because he likes cartoon stuff. He likes comic books because obviously she's been introduced to a lot of really great graphic novels through you. He likes Doctor Who. So, yes, she thinks she'd be great at it because you like all the fun stuff that we do.
Right.
So there you go.
No, I appreciate it. So
I don't know how she'd go with the idea of this, weird, you know, it looks like one of the face of that creature from Stranger Things on a snake's body. It's terrifying.
Yes. Oh, man, it was really creepy, wasn't it? And the way it just kind of absorbed back into the spine of all places.
Yeah, I was waiting for it to latch onto the back of his head and do something. So when it just like absorbs into him, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool and creepy at the same time. I really like that. Interestingly, he's like, oh, normally I would, you know, have, as we saw earlier, I just have minions do this for me. Like, I don't know why he's been doing that. Like, there's Vinda going, oh, you have asked for this envoy of these two other characters to go off and kill the family of one of your naysayers. And so I'm gonna throw your name under the bus, even at my own expense. You know what would be really easy? Just next time your enemy's family are out doing something, just walk past them and release your serpent, your flower-headed serpent on them.
Yeah.
Who's going to know? No, there's, I don't know. Jeez, did you see that thing? Well, who did that? My goodness.
Yeah. Flower-headed serpent.
If I had that skill, and he's like, oh, now I've got to bring out the old, Little Shop of Horrors snake. Yeah. God, I've moved on beyond exhausting. This.
Yeah.
People to do this for me. Oh, mate, things to do.
That's what I used to do in the past. I'm important now. Doesn't want to play.
But interesting, that his big plan now is to take out Unit is an interesting choice. Yeah. And the Kate character, which is if I'm not mistaken, was certainly, I don't know if it was brought back by Chris Chibnall, but certainly, or created, but certainly was in, the first time we saw her was in a script that he wrote. So it makes sense that he has brought her back. I really love that she's kind of stood up to him and had a bit of gravitas. That was really cool. Especially last we heard, Unit's gone, she's disappeared. So this is maybe the explanation for why that's happened.
She's gone dark.
Is, Is she talking to Saigon Osgood or normal Osgood? I guess right. We'll find out too.
Yeah.
And all of that was and look, a little nod to Nicholas Courtney, who played the Brigadier,
yeah.
her storyline father, and a nice little nod to him that I saw in the credits they used his actual voice for in 1967 or whatever it was, which also had a very nerdy nod to the post office tower, which was, I think, the War Machines, that story was first Doctor run. So, you can get a lot into a little scene, a nice little bit of fan service into just a couple of little lines.
It was so good. The post office tower business is from 1966, and the audio of Lethbridge Stewart is from part four of Terror of the Autons, which is pretty cool. It's funny, I didn't look too much before we started this podcast, but I did see some people saying that the unit timeline is becoming confusing. But I don't know about you, but when it comes to continuity for TV shows or comics or whatever that have been going on a long time, knowing full well that they were never planned to have this much longevity, the way I just deal with it is things are changing through time and space all the time, and who knows what little ripples just change things permanently. So if there's a little continuity issue, I always have it that, well, there was an adventure in the past that just changed things slightly, and that's how continuity works, and that's how I just get through it, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, there's never ever been a question from me about, well, when were the unit stories actually set, especially around the Pertwee era. And there's always been a part of fandom that have just not been able to handle that you can't put a timeline on it. It seems like it's slightly into the future. It's not necessarily in the early part of the 70s when it went to air, because they've got some semblance of borderline futuristic devices. So maybe it was just ahead in like the early to mid 70s, but then other stories don't add up chronologically. You just go, don't do that to yourself. So I think there'd be a lot of people who, and maybe this is just Chibnall throwing the cat amongst the pigeons, or maybe he is trying to say, well, this is when it was definitively set. Either way, that's not a bone I choose to chew on. I think it's one of those ones that the unit timeline has never been one that's really bothered me at all.
No, it's, I just don't have time to be that exhausted trying to, work things out and be angry when they don't quite work
out. It's nice having it back. I certainly like that idea. I think the idea of unit is one of those ones that it's just nice having it there. Not all the time. Yeah. Every time the doctor's on Earth doesn't need to call unit. I thought it was very interesting that there's, Prentice Grand Serpent character facing off with Kate Stewart, and she's like, I'm on to you. I've twigged. Yeah. People are going missing. I even know that you've got some weird snaky thing, and I've got a neuroblocker in my head, and watch out, mate, because I'm coming for you. And if you think you're going to stop me, well, guess what? I've got a friend, and you don't want me to call that friend. I'm like, you haven't called the doctor by now? Wow. Okay. At this point, I would have man, before I put the neuroblocker in my brain to protect myself from the Little Shop of Horrors psychic snake, I maybe would have just given the doctor a buzz, just sent a text saying, hey, look, new phone, who dis, but something you might need to know.
Before we finish, we should also mention Bell and Vindic continue to show off traits that are inherent in the Doctor. Bell stealing a ship and flying off to save people. Vindic standing up to a much more formidable foe. Do you think their story is going to end well in the finale?
I still don't. I'm now starting to wonder, geez, are they? I'm trying to work out who are they? Are they the Doctor's parents from the other wormhole? I obviously... The answer of this is why, as I mentioned last week, this is why we keep hearing that it's a Lupari ship, it's a Lupari ship, it's a Lupari ship, is to, oh, we need you to come and be part of this barrier. And knowing that Dan and co are sending their message from 1904 and the Lupari Carbonista saying, oh, I can't time travel, So that suggests that Bell, no matter where she is in the current timeline. So my idea of these two, and they obviously there was a little hyperdrive reference that perhaps yep. they are in the same timeline, says Vinda. So, yeah, I'm actually really, really interested to see who they are. Part of me is like, do they end up being Swarm and Azure? Maybe. Right. But the fact that Vinda's sacrificed himself to get into Passenger very willingly, Swarm said, I could smell you. And he was like, I thought you could, almost like that was the plan. And now yeah. he's recruiting Di. So there, and I guess anybody else has been taken. So maybe, yeah, like you say, this is part of when someone disintegrates, they all now will be an army that can explode and refill the universe and take out Swarm and Azure. But the D, I think it is Graham, who's playing Bell. I'm loving her. I love the character. Oh, yeah. I would watch an entire series with her in the lead. She's just there's a playfulness, but also an authority about her that I really, really like. And yeah, a reference to her saying, you know, I swore an oath to help those in distress. I still haven't quite got who these two people are. Where are these characters from? What do they do? I know they're very, very good people, but swore an oath to who? Who was Vinda working for that he got fired from, that he was a great pilot and did these brave things? That's all still up in the air. So, you know, we've only got the one episode to go, but it doesn't take much for just, as we discovered in this episode, it's like two scenes with big chunks of dialogue and you can get a lot of information and a lot of reveals out. So to see where these two lead will be very interesting.
Diane has
I'm excited for it.
Yeah, so am I. Diane's become quite militant in the Passenger, hasn't she? She's
wouldn't you, I guess.
Not having a crack, but it was just great to see.
She's ready to she's been taking names and now she's ready to kick ass with those names. So that's going to be great. And again, I like this idea. We've built in this series a bunch of well-rounded characters on both sides, good and bad. That, you know, we're going to have I feel like there's going to be some kind of monumental battle next week. There's not too much more we need to, you know, stop the flux and save the day. There's still a bit of work to wrap everyone, you know, getting back to their timelines, I guess. That doesn't take too much. But there still needs to be a lot of questions answered. And do we have enough time to do that? Which ones to be continued makes for a really fascinating finale, I think.
You know, we could be about to see the universe get destroyed and we discover that the Doctor has been in the wrong universe since she fell in her first episode onto the train. Maybe she fell into the wrong universe and this is a universe that gets destroyed. So then when the new Doctor takes over, it's the original Doctor that we followed all the way through, including Jodie's Doctor, and then they're back in the universe that the adventures have always been in up until her first moment.
I can't accept a universe where Graham is not in the same space as me. Brutal. I'm sorry. No. We've had references in classic era Doctor Who of like e-space and living outside of this time and space and universe. But Warrior's Gate is another episode that kind of covered this sort of, you know, world between worlds stuff. But we haven't gone full multiverse. So when you add that to the mix, man, I don't know if you've watched any of the DC stuff that we get on Foxtel here. Supergirl and The Flash and Arrow. The Flash in particular loves dealing with multiverse stuff, and they've killed off characters and brought them back from, you know, here's another version of that character from a multiverse. And it's only about two, three seasons later that you realize, yeah, that's right. It wasn't the original guy. He's gone. This is now you know, version four of him from Earth 12. So, when you put that in there, it does mean like anything is possible. You can just detonate this whole thing, and then from here on in, we're living in a different multiverse. We may even find that various incarnations of the Doctor. Maybe this is why Una has been brought in to point out, hey, you know, all those times you're like, why doesn't this add up chronologically? Well, maybe it wasn't happening on our Earth in our timeline. You know, every regeneration has put a doctor in a different time and space. None of it actually happened on our Earth, in our universe, as we know it. Why not?
Why not? It seems like she's going to go back to the crooked house in the crooked universe.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if that is, maybe that will be her opening up the little Gallifreyan device that, brings back her memories.
Well, we see, interestingly, that it's Swarm and Azure who seem to be really into the idea of the Doctor knowing what happened and those memories. And, of course, there's from episode one, the first time we saw Swarm was, I know you, we've fought a long time over many different incarnations. I remember it all and you don't. Mm. That's still very interesting to me. And the fact that it looks like Azure is the one that opens the the fob watch that has the Doctor's memories in them. So they want her to remember. Well, why is that? That really gets me excited. So there's some great fun stuff to be resolved, but the main stuff is, the Doctor's history and the Vinda and Bell characters are the two big ones that I, and I guess to an extent Swarm and Azure, where they're from and why. Those are my big highlights that I'm looking for next week. How many of them will be answered? I guess we will see, but I don't feel it's just going to be thrown away.
No.
I'm excited to find out. And again, is there a big wow to take us into the Christmas special? We got Daleks. Yeah. We got a shot of Daleks. So
yeah,
Cybermen. Everybody's back next week.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. Like, I'm starting to really get into this idea that she's been in the wrong universe the whole time. We find out in this universe the Doctor is the Timeless Child, but when our Doctor returns to our universe, she retains all the mystery because this version doesn't know who she is and doesn't know what her past is. So you can take all of that into account. You get a nice mystery solved and then you still have mystery.
Yeah, you start bringing all that sort of multiverse stuff into it, and what does any of it really matter? And I think if that was the outcome, I think the wonderful irony of people being outraged because something that has probably been put there intentionally to say none of it really matters, it's an alien whose face changes in a time and space police box. None of this. Don't overthink it. Please don't overthink it. And yet it will make them overthink and make them get really mad. So part of me almost wants that to happen.
Just a couple of numbers things to finish off with that I thought you might find interesting. I didn't have a lot of time, between watching it and getting things prepared for us, but I noticed that the 22 number in for the special, the New Year's Day special, the 22 and the advertising was an infinity sign, and so I thought I'll just do a little research on the number 22 and see what comes up. And the first thing that came up, and I haven't had time to delve right into this, but this is literally the first thing that I saw, was the number 22 in spiritual guides is named the master number because of its powerful vibration that comes from the desire of your angels. They're often telling you you're on the right path in your life and your dreams will turn to reality. Might be a coincidence. Just thought I'd throw it out there.
Man, that's not a squid bit. That's a huge part of a squid. That's a full tentacle. That's incredible. Wow. And that's just at a cursory search as well.
Just
really
cursory.
Nice.
Might not mean anything, but kind of tasty. And the other thing is something that I keep forgetting to mention to you is I love how the dates in the TV show coincide with the dates that it airs in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
And we have been told that the world ends on December 5th, and that is next Sunday. But there's a possibility, because we won't get the episode till the 6th in Australia, can we assume they win, or is there a possibility we won't get the finale?
Well, we should know by now, won't we? If there's no reviews coming in, that's a bad sign. It happened. Okay, they didn't pull this off. at least in this multiverse anyway. Yeah, look, there's a little bit of also that extra frustration of, Well, if you were scripting the dates for when this was going to happen, you could have let us know sooner with a bit of pre-publicity that it was coming. It's not like, oh, we just had to sort of slot it in where we could. You had six episodes that are very date-specific. It almost makes me a little bit more frustrated that we only just got the lead-up to what is a great series. It would have been so much better, I think, for the show that they heralded its arrival, because I think it's been sensational and it would have been nice to have a bit more of a wait for it. I suppose they don't want people thinking about it too much and speculating and leaks getting out. But look, for what it is, I've just been enjoying it and I'm really looking forward to seeing where we go and, more importantly, where to next after this time next week. Oh, my God, if we're all still here.
If we're all still here, fingers crossed. It's going to be bittersweet next week because I can't wait for the finale, but I've loved doing this podcast with you, and I'm looking forward to what we get to discuss next Monday.
I know you do. I hope you said I miss you too, or that bit's weird.
As always, a big thank you to Ro for hanging out with us today to discuss Doctor Who. No one better to hang out with to have a chat about this stuff, and it's just been a really fun 5 weeks, and we've only got one more to go. It's bittersweet, but as always, Rove's fantastic. Also, a big thank you to our patron for the episode, David Brogno. I hope you enjoyed this episode and what we have coming up for the end of the year. Remember, if you'd like to contribute to the podcast, but the Patreon is a bit too much to commit to, and, you know, I say that knowing that it has been a tough, you know, 2 years, and we're heading into Christmas, which is some stressful shit. So if you want to contribute, but Patreon is a bit too much to commit to at this point in your life, you can write a top review on Apple Podcasts. You can recommend us to people you think who might enjoy our work over here, or just, you know, continue enjoying the podcast. There's no wrong way to be a part of our community. I'm going to finish today with a quote from Peter Capaldi. This popped up in my feed last week. I feel like he's a doctor that doesn't quite get enough love. I know there's some real fans of his, but, you know, we're at the end of the podcast. There's no point getting into it right now. But I think this quote, from his perspective, sums up possibly why people don't quite have the same love for him as they should. Capaldi said, "I wanted to be a more distant and alien doctor because that's how I remember William Hartnell, being a kid in Glasgow on dark winter nights when this strange figure with the white hair and slightly irate voice could open this portal to a magical world. The default now is a kind of cosmic imp, which is great, but I wanted to touch the dark winter nights. I'm not sure whether the brand supports that anymore, but that's what I was interested in." Capaldi. One of the greats. Until then.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.